The second Marian dogma that deserves time and attention in our study of the theology of the body is the Immaculate Conception. Even though Pope Pius IX defined the dogma as authentic Catholic teaching in his 1854 papal encyclical Ineffabilis Deus, it had had a tumultuous history. Indeed, one of the greatest intellectual lights of the church, St. Thomas Aquinas, wrestled with how best to understand it. As Donald Calloway notes in his book, The Virgin Mary and the Theology of the Body, in reality, St. Thomas progressed in his view of the question of the Immaculate Conception. But the great champion of the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception was undoubtedly the 13th century theologian John Duns Scotus. Blessed Scotus explained Mary's Immaculate Conception like this: "It is a more excellent benefit to preserve from evil than to permit someone to fall into evil, even if one is freed from it afterwards." Think about Scotus's distinction by picturing two scenarios, two ways to save someone who is hit by a bus as they cross the road. In the first scenario, you witness the bus hitting a pedestrian. You carry them bleeding off of the street. You care for their wounds and you call an ambulance. You saved the injured person. In the second scenario, you see the pedestrian on the verge of crossing the street, but you grab them before the bus can collide into them. Here too, you have saved the person, but more perfectly. Christ saves all humanity in the first scenario. We are hit by the bus of original sin. But Christ saved his mother Mary in the second scenario, before the bus of original sin hit her. Mary, therefore, was saved thanks to Christ's prevenient grace, and thus saved more perfectly. The important point is that in both scenarios, Christ truly saves, either by redemption after the fact or beforehand, by redemption by preservation. Here too, I believe John Paul's theology of the body can shed light on Mary's Immaculate Conception. Not in explaining how she was saved — Scotus did that — but by illuminating the effects of being saved. That is, by never suffering the ravages of Adam and Eve's original sin. John Paul insists that Adam and Eve enjoyed three unique experiences in the Garden of Eden prior to the fall, namely, original solitude, original unity, and original nakedness. That is, Mary shows us what human life would have been like if Adam and Eve had never been hit by the bus of original sin. And of course, each of these three original experiences before the bus accident are intimately connected to the body. Thus, John Paul zeroes in on the fundamental effect of original sin as a break in the body-soul union. He writes, "Adam's words, 'I was afraid because I am naked,' reveal a certain constitutive fracture in the human person's interior, a breakup, as it were, of man's original spiritual and somatic unity. He goes on. He realizes for the first time that his body has ceased drawing on the power of the Spirit, which raised him to the level of the image of God. This fracture, therefore, is the basic effect of being hit by the bus of original sin. Our body feels disjointed from our soul. Indeed, we feel raging in our members a war within us, as St. Paul described it in Romans chapter 7, verse 23. But the immaculately conceived Virgin Mary felt no war within her members, but only peace and joy. Earlier, when we discussed original sin, we observed that one effect is the loss of original solitude, causing man to become a stranger to himself. Man lost his true identity. He suffered a collective amnesia about himself as a child of God. After being hit by the bus of original sin, man saw himself not as a god, small g, but as a grunt, a highly advanced gorilla. But Mary was not hit by the bus. Her body and soul in perfect harmony and holiness. Thus, the Pope expounds, the body was from the beginning marked, so to speak, as a visible factor of transcendence, in virtue of which man as a person surpasses the visible world of living beings, animalia. Thus, in the mystery of creation, the human body carried within itself an unquestionable sign of the image of God. In other words, thanks to Christ's prevenient grace, Mary never suffered that amnesia, and therefore she knew herself to be a child of God. Indeed, she understood herself to be a princess who was destined to become a queen. As the inscription above the doors to the Temple of Delphi reads, Gnothi Seautu, know thyself. And Mary did. Adam and Eve also abdicated another original experience called original unity. That is, they originally experienced sexual intimacy as a beautiful reflection of the love in the heart of the Holy Trinity. They experienced marital relations as simultaneously imbued with sensuality, but also spirituality. But being hit by the bus of original sin, sexual love was invaded by selfish lust. John Paul explains, what disappears is the simplicity and purity of their original experience of love, which helped them to bring about a singular fullness of mutual self-communication. That is, the difference for Mary and Joseph, of course, is that while Mary was immaculately conceived, poor Saint Joseph was not. I'm speculating here, but perhaps that is one reason they remained perpetually virgins, never engaging in sexual intimacy. Why? Because Saint Joseph felt he could not love Mary with that simplicity and purity of original unity, and he did not want to love her with anything less, because that's what she deserved. Joseph was an aspiring saint, to be sure, but he was still a man of concupiscence, like the rest of us. The third original experience prior to being hit by the bus was original nakedness, accompanied by an absence of shame. As John Paul had analyzed earlier, Adam and Eve essentially became a gift to each other in their spousal embrace, and thus felt no fear or threat of being used by another as an object. As a result of being mutual gift, they could stand naked and feel no shame. Again, that absence of shame would apply to Mary's experience of spousal love, but not necessarily to Saint Joseph's. Here's how John Paul contrasts these spiritual roles. The man of concupiscence, i.e., Joseph, does not rule his own body in the same way, with the same simplicity and naturalness as the man of original innocence, i.e., Mary. The structure of self-possession is in some way shaken in him to its very foundations. He identifies himself anew with this structure in the degree to which he is continually ready to win it. My apologies to Saint Joseph if I sound like I'm selling him short. And perhaps this is why tradition refers to the saintly spouse of the Blessed Virgin as Saint Joseph, her most chaste spouse. He was doing the best he could with what he had. This then is Mary's reality as the Immaculate Conception. She was preserved from being hit by the bus of original sin due to her divine Son's prevenient grace of redemption. Jesus saved Mary perfectly. Nonetheless, Mary lived in the midst of men and women of concupiscence who had been hit by the bus of original sin. All people, you and I, therefore, are either nursing our wounds and recovering like Saint Joseph, or we're giving in to those injuries and letting them fester. But Mary loved her neighbor with simplicity and purity, and that is how she joined Jesus in helping save people who had been hit by the bus. Praised be Jesus Christ.